If you've ever had to be reassured by somebody that they're not abandoning you, they probably are. In our passage today, John's Gospel's passage, Jesus is responding to this very anxiety that's welling up in the disciples, that they're feeling because they understand that he's slipping away from them and there's nothing that they can really do about it. So he responds to them by saying, "I will not leave you orphaned." But it's not at all clear how he will keep that promise to the disciples, because in a few hours he will be arrested, tried, beaten, crucified, dead, and buried. And death will be all that the disciples are left with, at least for a while. So in a very real sense, Jesus is not only the one, is not the only one who's going to be suffering a grave loss. They are going to be suffering a grave loss. His mother will be suffering a grave loss. Those that he leaves behind lose him, and without him, they lose whatever sense of security that they might have felt in this world. After his death, they will take refuge by hiding behind locked and closed doors. They will isolate from one another, and they'll be terrified of everyone and everything that stands on the other side of a door that they've locked since his death. We rarely think of what happened to Jesus as an experience of combat. But this Memorial Day, I want to focus on it in that light, because it is a story of his arrest, which includes soldiers that come for him. It includes weapons that are carried and wielded, and for a brief moment, it even includes hand-to-hand combat by Peter, who takes his sword and draws it and cuts the ear off of the chief priest's slave. 24 hours later, those who could not keep watch with him in the garden or save him from the cross or from any enemy whatsoever will be lost and orphaned themselves. Their commander will be dead at the age of 33. This weekend, in fact, tomorrow, we will observe Memorial Day. It began in 1868 as a remembrance of the dead on both sides of the Civil War. It is meant as a reminder of our collective civic life. It is meant to remind us of the cost of war and the horrible toll that it takes on those who are forced to fight on our behalf. Just as the death of Jesus resulted in more than one casualty that Friday and Saturday, so too the human costs of war have always been higher than we truly have counted. According to the Veterans Administration, almost 12 veterans commit suicide each and every day between combat returning vets and the troops that are left behind here and the National Guard. 12 a day. Andrew Solomon has written a book called The Noonday Demon, an atlas of depression. And he associates three factors that contribute to suicide rates, especially amongst the military: feeling that you don't belong anymore when you return, feeling that you're a burden to others because what you have seen and experienced and done, and feelings that you do not have the capacity to overcome the fear of pain and being harmed yourself. PTSD. Eventually, the experience of social isolation and alienation becomes so strong for some of these vets that a person comes to believe that their death would be better for their families and for themselves, and so they take their lives. When these feelings become that strong, they become overpowering, and almost nothing, including our natural tendency to avoid harm to ourselves, can replace the desire to take our own lives. Near the end of his own book, Solomon writes this. He says, "So many people have asked me that I've written about what I can do or what we can offer to those who are depressed, especially friends and relatives. What should I do if I have a friend or a relative who's very, very severely depressed?" And my answer is actually quite simple and blunt. Blunt, he says, their isolation. Do whatever it takes to keep them from isolating. Do it with cups of tea or coffee if they drink that, or with long talks if that's what's necessary, or by sitting in a room even nearby where they are and staying with them even in silence. Do whatever it takes, whatever suits the circumstances, but just do it. The promise of the Spirit of the Advocate to the disciples is a promise from Jesus to blunt their isolation, to blunt their fear, to blunt their sense of loss. And he says, I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to be with you forever. Not just for a while, but forever. The word advocate, it means one who stands alongside of another, like a defense attorney would stand next to a client and advocate on their behalf. In our vocabulary today, we might say that the advocate is somebody who has our back, somebody who will not leave us alone no matter what. And this is what Jesus is promising the disciples when he says that he will send the gift of the Holy Spirit. In effect, he's saying that the advocate that I send you will have your back, will keep watch over you. So when the disciples experience Jesus is risen from the dead, they recognize this Spirit that he has promised to them. And they move from being isolated, fearful individuals in a community that's now called the church, a community bound together by a Spirit out of love for one another and for God. The glove of God that is given and received in a community like this offers healing. It offers a sense of belonging. It offers a sense of purpose. Where once there was only isolation, now there is a sense of family. As we remember those who have given the ultimate sacrifice this Memorial Day, let us not forget what the ultimate costs of war truly are. Those who have paid the ultimate price are at peace and rest. But those who have not had to pay that ultimate price still struggle with the moral costs, something we don't talk about. It's not something we speak about because it's not something that we feel comfortable, and it's not something that's been that tangible until recently. But it's an illness, I promise you, to the soul as real as depression is to the mind or diabetes is to the body. And this is a place where the church has something very valuable to offer those who are suffering from what would be called moral injury. As American soldiers continue to return from the front lines, we're going to continually have to deal with it. It's not going to go away. Because so many of them come back and they struggle with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And the consequences of having to make very difficult moral choices under very extremely difficult conditions. And these conditions lead to not only a physical injury, if you will, but they lead to a moral injury as well. Injuries that can cause guilt and grief, some of them are the symptoms, and in the severest form, they can destroy the person's very will to live. To combat the effects of moral injury, Reverend Nakisha Brock founded very recently in Fort Worth, Texas, what she calls the Soul Repair Center at Bright Divinity School to support returning veterans and their families, and to also train clergy from around the country and their communities on what to do for these returning vets and what Jesus commanded us to do when he said to love one another even as I have loved you. When the experience of survivor's guilt, when the trauma of combat memories and the sense of having betrayed one's own moral center, you don't get to escape that, by the way, even if it's a just war. Even the vets who fought in World War II often will say that it just caused them so much agony inside to take another human life, because we're not meant to do that as human beings. That's not how we're created. So when that moral center has been violated because of the necessity of what we call war, it can leave one desolate. And the community that Jesus has founded can offer something very valuable, many things actually that are very valuable. It can offer forgiveness, for one. It can offer love, it can offer a sense of belonging, and it can offer a sense of acceptance. If you were to go to the Odyssey Network and look that up on Google, on their website, there's a video called Soul Repair. And in this video, there's a vet, a combat vet, that talks about the type of injury that Dr. Brock is trying to deal with and heal. In the video, a veteran on the video shares this following insight about the type of moral injury that soldiers are forced to face and deal with when they come back. He says this, you may be faced with looking down your gun sight at a child with something in his or her hand, and you can't quite make out what that thing is in their hand. You don't know whether it's a grenade or a rock. And they're standing next to a Humvee with people that you know and care about that are in your unit. And they're about to throw it into the Humvee. And if it's a grenade, you're going to lose people in your company that you're responsible for. And if it's a rock, you're going to kill a kid that was doing nothing more than throwing a rock and playing a game. And there's no good choice in that. There's no way out of that. People come home after they've been to war, and what they've done may have been the right thing under the set of circumstances they were given and presented. They may have even felt right about what they did at the time when they came home. And they may know this deep down inside because it helped keep them and their company alive. But then, after they've left the combat scene, after they've left all the horror behind, they come back into a society, into a place of transition called civilian life, which has a very, very different moral code to it than war codes from the military. And they begin to feel uneasy about themselves or bad about the things that they had to do. And even if they were doing their duty, even if they were doing the right things they had to do in order to stay alive and save other human beings in their company, they can become and feel as if they are worthless human beings for this. And you can make them into somebody that's not lovable anymore, who doesn't feel like they deserve love, that they're worthy of love. And so you see the cost, not only in terms of suicides, but the cost in terms of divorce rates that skyrocket amongst returning vets, and the alcoholism and the drug abuse that follows, all trying to numb this moral injury. And it can lead to a state of despair and depression that just never lifts. We think of this as something that has hurt the soul, she says, Dr. Brock says. But we don't talk that way in the society, and we need to. We need to talk about it as a moral injury, every bit as real as a head injury or a war wound. And it's one of the major factors in why veterans come back and commit suicide. Moral injury is not something that can be treated by one-on-one therapy either. It doesn't work to go and see a therapist. What is required is something much bigger and broader than that. What is required is the support of a whole community, literally a whole community, to rebuild a whole new moral identity for this person, to develop a long-range plan to build a new life so that the old life can be left in the past, be repented of, so to speak, walked away from. That seems to me to be like a mission for religious communities. That seems to be something that we know how to do. So I thought that if it was just about training religious people on understanding what moral injury is, we could then begin to understand the trauma that so many combat vets feel upon their return. Because most people don't talk about these things. Most vets won't open up and talk about what they've gone through. And most of us, if they did, wouldn't know what to say to them when they tell us what they had to do. So they just don't talk about it. Instead, it gets buried inside, like so many other things. And we think it'll go away, but it never does. It never goes away. So they're not going to just volunteer up stories if we ask them to, because they're feeling guilty. They're feeling very shamed, and they're feeling the horror, and they don't want to relive it, certainly, and have it come flashing back in all of its glory and grief. I think there's just an enormous amount of grief that comes out of war that doesn't get processed, that we haven't even begun to talk about. And that is certainly something that religious communities have a lot of experience in handling. We know how to handle rituals around grief. We know how to handle endings and offer new beginnings. I think the way a person, you see, is restored to a sense of their own goodness, no matter the moral injury, because it's not just combat vets that experience moral injuries. We, all of us, can experience moral injuries. They include addictions or abuse of those that you really love, but for some reason mistreat. It can result in the denial of all of it, too, and not wanting to face up to it. I see it all the time when I counsel people. Nobody really wants to own up to what the dark side of them is. Nobody wants to examine it. It's too horrific. But if you're in a community where you can be forgiven and loved and given a purpose again, you can build a new identity different than the one that you have. To participate in a life-giving community like this one, where the things you do for other people matter and are deeply appreciated, and have that reflected back to you, a sense that you are loved and appreciated for what you are doing, that's what repairs a moral injury. I think this is the sort of community Jesus was trying to build when he offered his disciples the Advocate, a spirit powerful enough to cut through and get to the heart of wounded souls. Wounded souls, folks, that all of us have been entrusted with and called to love and heal. That's our task, to be disciples healing wounded souls in a wounded world. Amen.